The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
You are listening to Sports Roundtable.
Hi, everybody. Welcome once again to Sports Roundtable. This is Bob Branco. Glad to be here with all of you on this fine day. Before we continue, let me just mention that this is episode 441, dated Monday, May 4th, 2026. Allow me to introduce our panel members that we have. We start out with Mitch Pomerantz.
Good afternoon. Good evening from beautiful downtown Pasadena. And we have entered May, and so for the next 2 months, we will be experiencing May gray and June gloom. It is 65 and cloudy, and they're even making some mention of showers, but we shall see. But it's pretty damp outside, but it is what it is for this time of year in Southern California. Good to be here.
We are sunny, very breezy today. Temperatures about 60 to 65. It'll be a little warm up, but then another cool down. That's what it's like here in southern New England. Reverend Michael Garrett.
Well, welcome from Missouri City, Texas, where it is about 81 degrees with mostly cloudy skies. And we're in a good zone right now. Temperatures range from the upper 60s to the low 80s for the next few days.
Don Wardlow.
Yeah, it's a nice day here in Jersey. We were supposed to touch 70. It was a long and difficult day for me. I'll get into that once you've done your bookkeeping, Bob.
All right, so before we continue, and we do have a special guest today, which I will introduce momentarily, but let's do some other cleaning. We would like to thank those people who make it possible for Sports Roundtable to be made available. That would be Raymond Gay, our producer. Thank you for what you do. Our media sources, thank you for airing us when you do. Also, Peter from Canada, thank you from the bottom of our hearts for posting our shows on your chat board. It is much appreciated. And also Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions. Thank you for archiving our shows on my website. In order to find them, go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to Sports Roundtable Podcasts. Click on them, and you'll see most of our archives from latest to earliest. And as Peter Alchel would say, merci, Jackie. Peter Alchel will not be with us today. He has another transportation issue similar to what he had last week. The transportation is kind of slipping up a little bit where he's at. He'll talk about it if he wants. Luther King still recuperating. We don't know when he will be back. Luther, we're still praying for you. I want to say hi to Diane, who is our Zoom host for today's program, along with Brad, who is our streamer. And because we are being streamed live, let me give out our number, email address that is, bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com. I just want to take a couple of minutes before we introduce our guest. I would like to extend my deepest sympathies to Boston sports fans. They've had a nightmare week. Celtics and Bruins were both eliminated from playoffs in front of home fans in a 24-hour period. Not to mention the fact that the Red Sox fired their manager and several position coaches, and the Patriots coach is under public scrutiny. So, you know, other than that, Boston sports fans have nothing to worry about. And I also would like to offer my condolences to the family of John Sterling, former longtime radio voice of the Yankees. He passed away last night at the age of 87. We're going to miss John Sterling. He was a icon in radio broadcasting for the New York Yankees for a long, long time. He broadcast over 5,000 consecutive games for the Yankees. He will be missed. Don, you wanted to say something briefly, and then I would like to introduce our guest for today's show.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You never want to get a phone call at 7 o'clock in the morning. It's never anything good. And while, at least in God's mercy, it was none of my family, physical family, it was someone I heard more often than most of my family. I mean, I heard John Sterling every day throughout the baseball season since 1989. So, man, he will be missed.
Most definitely. So without further ado, let me introduce somebody who's been on our program before. And we're talking about Pete Weber, hockey radio voice for the Nashville Predators. It is playoffs, after all, so this is a very appropriate time for Pete to join us. Pete, thank you for coming back on Sports Roundtable. We appreciate you.
Glad to be on, and thank you very much for that warmth. I'm thinking about John Sterling a lot myself, because it goes back to when I was doing the Seattle Sonics, and he was doing the Atlanta Hawks, and he was playing at a game in the Kingdom, and the team was going to a fourth overtime period. Not a big thing, except that, please keep in mind, John Sterling had a three-hour sports talk show to do before the game even began on WSB in Atlanta. So as Fred Brown very expertly missed his second free throw off to the side for James Donaldson, who could put it up and in for 2 points to tie the game and make that fourth overtime necessary, I looked back at John, and I could see a mortification appearance on his face. He had to go to the bathroom. He had not had a bathroom break yet. So we fabricated an emergency long-distance phone call, and Nancy Welts, who was the PR director for the Sonics, made the announcement down press row, and John very quickly said, well, we better go to a simulcast here. I've got to take this phone call. I'll pass the microphone back to Skip Carey. He then walked down the first baseline at the Kingdom back into the home dugout where they had the bathroom facilities. He was in there for just a little bit, came back out and had this very relieved look on his face, and was then able to resume the balance of that fourth overtime period, which the Sonics took from the Hawks that particular night. And if you want to check things out, folks, this was in the 1981-82 NBA season. That's how old I am.
Boy, what broadcaster doesn't have a story similar to that? My own was in London, Ontario, and it was the 12th inning of an extra inning game that we ultimately won, thank God. But somebody, I don't know how my partner found somebody to get me downstairs to where the such facilities as they had were. But I bet any broadcaster has got a story like that somewhere. But you, even you do, Pete.
Yes, without any question. local, usually, though, there are facilities right behind where we are located in the NHL buildings today. But that was not always the case.
I always admired John Sterling's home run calls. They were so creative.
Yes, absolutely. And the various ones that he had, but we've heard so many of them replayed today, and it's been a joy each time.
So tell us what you think so far, Pete, about the playoff picture. I think that, see, I'm a passionate Bruins fan.
Yes.
And I know the Bruins were a lower seed than the Sabres. I kind of am not surprised that the Sabres won. As a Bruins fan, I would hope the Bruins would do the upset. But it didn't work that way, and I am satisfied. I am perfectly understanding about the whole thing. But moving forward, Pete, what do you think is going to happen as far as the playoff picture is concerned right now?
I think they have finally stopped scoring in last night's Avalanche game. that was, wow, 9-6. If the original coach, Jacques Lemaire of the Minnesota Wild, were still coaching, I think he would have had a fatal infarction last night, because his idea of a high-scoring game was 2-1. He was the one who brought the neutral zone trap to the NHL, stifling offense back in the 90s. And then to conceive that his team was part of giving up 9 goals last night in a playoff game probably would have resulted in his untimely demise.
Now, right? 15 goals, is that a record for the most goals in a playoff game?
No, it is not.
Okay.
And we can go back many, many years, actually back to the outset of the NHL, when they had games that were far more high scoring than that. But I was involved in a game once with the LA Kings and the Edmonton Oilers, which ended up 10-8 LA. And I saw a video of that recently, and I thought, my God, they were so slow. They just aren't moving as fast as today's game is. So that was incredible. Now, part of my background is many years in Buffalo. And so I'm surprised to see how good Buffalo has been since American Thanksgiving, and they have been a dominant team. I was not surprised they took care of the Bruins. But now they take on the Montreal Canadiens in the next round, which for them begins on Wednesday. That's going to be fun to watch. But I just don't see anybody beating Colorado this year. They've just been fantastic from the time they dropped the puck to open the year way back in October.
I agree. They are very, very dominating. So I'm surprised in a way that Tampa got eliminated. I really thought Tampa would go a lot further than what they did. But, you know,
especially
I've always said I've always said that the hockey playoffs are the most unpredictable of all the playoffs in all professional sports.
Yes, without question.
Absolutely.
That's what makes them, I think, so much fun.
And gentlemen, what particularly annoys me is a sometimes Kings fan. I was surprised the Kings made the playoffs. Colorado took care of them. But what really annoyed me is that Anaheim did something that the Kings have tried the last three seasons to do, and that was to beat Edmonton in the first round of the playoffs. And Anaheim managed it. Obviously, it's not the same Edmonton hockey team that the Kings have been dealing with the last three or four years. And I keep being very pleased. We have a plumber that we know who does work on our place, and his son is in the Ducks minor their youth program, their youth hockey program. And I haven't seen I haven't seen Daniel in quite some time, and I know perfectly well after the two or three years previous when Anaheim was so bad and the Kings were a whole lot better that I'd have to take a lot of grief from him because his Anaheim Ducks not only made the playoffs but beat Edmonton, and we couldn't do that.
And tonight, Anaheim plays game number one of their series with Vegas Golden Knights, and John Tortorella, who took over as head coach, with four games to go in the regular year. So that's going to be a fun series to watch, I think.
Well, Anaheim is a different county, so I can't root for them.
Understood. You're not wearing orange. I got it.
No, absolutely not.
Pete, what are your thoughts on the major break that the hockey season took in February? I know the Olympics are important. I enjoy the Olympics.
Yeah.
But do you think that the huge lull in the season had an impact on players who were not involved with the Olympics, especially?
I don't think it bothered them. But there's some players that came out of the Olympics injured as a result of their participation. Kevin Fiala of the Kings is among those, and there have been others in the past. I it is a big risk to take all that time out, risk your top players for injury. But still, I think with the way it turned out, now there was no guarantee it was going to turn out this way, where Team USA beat Team Canada for the gold medal. I think that has had a marvelous impact on the league and has really raised its awareness level around North America.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I don't mind the Olympics at all. I think it's great. And I'm wondering if other leagues will follow suit. As a matter of fact, I'm wondering if the NBA will do the same thing someday. I've always said that the World Baseball Classic is held at the wrong time.
Yep.
I mean, players in February have a mindset. They are getting ready for the season. That's why you have spring training to prepare. Yes. All of a sudden, you're shoved right into the World Baseball Classic, and all of a sudden, you've got to play at your highest level, and some players might not be ready for that. I maintain that the World Baseball Classic be held in November. I know I've had debates with people about the weather. I think it's a little warmer in November than it is in March.
I agree. I agree. Even when we're talking about Arizona primarily, where they play. But I'm wondering if maybe they won't do what the NHL now has done and maybe put that instead of the All-Star break. Because the All-Star game as it is now, I think, is a travesty.
So have a 2-week break in July or 3-week break in July,
yeah.
Perhaps?
Yeah.
That's interesting. And you're right about All-Star games. They have watered down. I mean, I think the baseball All-Star game is still the most, for lack of a better term, normal.
Yes.
Compared with all the other ones. I mean, the football All-Star game is like flag football. The basketball All-Star game is just shooting. I mean, yes. You're going to score 211 points now in an All-Star game. That's kind of crazy. The hockey All-Star game, well, it's more than two teams to play now, right? It's like a little tournament.
It's a little tournament, and it's really much like what we saw all those years from Nolan Ryan. No hitters.
Bob and Pete, I think the problem with baseball is it is so dependent for pitchers on getting the ball in that little 17-inch strike zone. And hitters, it's timing. Will Smith was out for us for a couple of games. His back tightened up, and he came back. In his first game back, he struck out 3 times. Timing is everything in baseball, and pitchers have to be precise. I just cannot imagine that baseball will ever accept that long a delay. The fact is that the Dodgers have gone to the 6-man pitching staff, yeah. and because we've got 3 Japanese pitchers, and they're used to that. But I don't know that it's helping the other pitchers. I don't think waiting a week to pitch is good for one's control and command, or a hitter, or hitters taking a lot of time off. I just don't think it's going to happen.
We will have to animate the late Johnny Saint to come back and work with the guys in their period of time off, whereas they don't lose their control at all. And Johnny Saint was great at that.
Mitch, would that be Sasaki, Yamamoto, and who? Who's the third Japanese pitcher? I'm trying. Yeah, Yamamoto, Sasaki, and somebody else.
Otani.
Oh, Otani, of course. Yeah, I always. I know I should think of Otani as a pitcher, but I'm so used to him as a hitter. I know he does both, but.
I understand. I understand. I mean, the crazy thing right now with the Dodgers is our pitcher with a 5-0 record is somebody that no one had ever heard of before last year. He is a left-hander named Justin Robleski.
Yep.
And he's got an ERA under 2 and, Yamamoto's doing okay, except that he's the pitcher that the Dodgers aren't scoring any runs for. Sasaki pitched better on Saturday, but not as good as he needs to. And Otani's pitching pretty well. The Dodgers have been in a hitting slump for about the last 10 days. So, but this guy Robleski is, even with 5-6 days rest, is making these other pitchers look like nothing.
So, Pete, I'm going to ask a question, and this subject comes up in conversation a lot during some of these podcasts.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering why this continues, and that's the old dreaded pulling of the goaltender.
Yeah.
I understand why teams want to do it. I get it. But 90% of the time when a goal is scored, I don't mean the times when goals are never scored. I'm going to take that off the equation.
Okay.
90% of goals scored, I think, after goalies are pulled before the end of games, are scored by the opponents.
I agree with you there. But, and this is a tactic that really got popularized by an ex-goaltender as head coach, Patrick Waugh. But a guy who actually did it before him with regularity was the LA Kings coach, Andy Murray. He did it like with 6-7 minutes to go in a game, realizing that his team was not generating any offense. So figured, what is he, you know, the old Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. What do you have to lose? And that's why they went after it. Yes, quite a few empty netters are scored, and that makes a big difference. But I can't imagine outlawing it. I think practicality as to how it turns out for the teams is what's going to justify continuing to do it or never doing it again. I mean, for example, the Soviets look back at the Miracle on Ice game, February 22nd, 1980, and the Soviets are down a goal late. They didn't even consider pulling the goaltender because they had never had to do it before. So they still lost by just one. So on Mike Ruzzioni's goal, that was it. But this is something that I think they will continue to do. And I know that you, how many letters to Gary Bettman have you written, Bob?
I've written one.
Only one. Okay.
That's all. I figured where he didn't respond to the first one, there was no point in me writing a second one.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
I just feel it's a waste of time. I mean, how often are you going to put your hand on a hot stove when you know you're going to burn yourself and keep on doing it?
Well, I did it quite a bit as a child, huh? Cause I wanted that hot cocoa. but you know, that's neither here nor there.
And I've seen empty net goals being scored 10 seconds after the goalie is pulled. It's crazy.
Yep. And I had the strangest, I think, of all. We had a regular season game in Tampa Bay about 5 or 6 years ago, and Colton Sisson scored an empty net goal, which turned out to be the second goal in his hat trick. He didn't score another empty netter. He scored a regular 5-on-5 goal to complete his hat trick, and I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that before.
Yeah, I don't know. I just feel it's a terrible practice because even if it worked half the time, I would be in favor of it, even if it just worked half the time.
Yeah.
Pete, I have a question. I raised this a couple of weeks ago, and I heard about it because it's something that the Women's Professional Hockey League is doing.
Yeah.
And I've always thought that the way points are given, I don't know that a team in overtime should get 1 point. The Kings had 20 ties overtime losses this year.
Yeah.
They got 20 points. The Women's Hockey League awards, I think I heard, or I'm making this up, but I think it's 3 points for a regular,
regulation win.
And then in overtime, 2 points to the winner and a point to the loser.
Yeah.
And I think that makes a whole lot more sense. And I can't imagine the state NHL, which is almost as bound as baseball, would ever try that. But I heard that and I said, I think that's a great scoring mechanism.
I agree. Some people have calculated what would have happened to the standings over the course of the last few years, and they came up with that it wouldn't be that big of a difference from what truly existed. But if you know those regulations, you're going to play the game differently. And I want to see how they would respond to that in real time.
Yeah, I just thought it was a fantastic idea. And maybe they could, you know, maybe try it in an exhibition during the exhibition season or something. But I just 20 overtime losses for the Kings just drove me nuts this season.
Well, how's that different from what we have now?
Well, right now you get 2 points for whether it's a regulation win or an overtime win, and 1 point if you lose. So in the overtimes, you're distributing 3 points, and when it's a regulation game, you're distributing two.
I think what the women do make more sense, Mitch. I believe you're right about that. Give more value to a straight win than you would give to an overtime win.
Absolutely. Maybe I should write to Gary Bettman.
There you go.
Reduce the whole aspect of not knowing what is going to happen with these overtime games. Yeah, as the Kings, one of my old clubs, but I'll never forget, it was back in the 70s, the Chicago Blackhawks 1 year, I believe has had 24 ties, very similar to what the Kings did this year.
Mm-hmm.
Did not have the overtime or shootout periods back then.
Yeah, it is crazy. And I like the shootout. I think it's a lot of fun. Unfortunately for the Kings, they didn't have enough scorers this year, so that's why they lost so many of these games. But I really like the shootout.
We had a 9-round shootout with the Kings this year here in Nashville.
I think I missed that one. Wow.
Good for you.
Yeah.
I did too. That would have been cool to listen to.
It was tiring. I got to tell you, Don, it was tiring.
I'm guessing you worked with Bob Miller, the icon out in L.A.
Yes, I did. I just spoke with him last week.
Well, is he something else or what?
Yes, he is. I knew him when he was at Wisconsin.
Yeah, he was fantastic. And, of course, his sidekick for many, many, many years just retired, Nick Nixon.
Right. And one more year for Jimmy Fox, then he's going to retire.
He's really good, too.
And, you know, I don't even enjoy hockey much, but Bob Miller is one of the few who can make me enjoy it.
There is a great bit that was put out by somebody on Threads this last week. The time, it was back when I was working with Bob, so that was 78 to 81, when Bob sort of misspoke and said Mario Lessard, the Kings goaltender, broke his stick, and now he's standing in front of the Kings net with 8 inches of shaft in his hand.
Oh, my. I love it.
Oh,
it's on YouTube. Very,
Murphy.
That's very funny.
It is.
Oh. 8 inches of shaft. And Nick Nixon, I found out later that it's not spelled the same, but I was thinking, I wonder if he used to say, I am not a crook.
No. How does he spell it, Don?
N-I-C-K-S-O-N.
Oh, Nixon.
He may
His
have had to change it.
All-time rock and roll DJ in Rochester, New York.
Hmm. Well, I remember, you know, guys like Jiggs McDonald.
Yeah.
Who I thought was really good. And the first year, maybe, or two of the Kings, there was a guy who was a local a fella out here in L.A. named Roy Story.
Oh, yeah. Roy was the immediate predecessor of Bob Miller.
Okay. All right. So McDonald, did Jiggs precede Roy Story?
Yes,
Roy
he did.
Between? Okay. All right.
So Jiggs went to 72, then joined the then-new Atlanta Flames in 72.
Right. I remember that.
And then Roy Story came in when Chick Hearn wished to hire Bob Miller, but he got overruled by Jack Kent Cook. And so he wanted to bring in Roy Story, and that lasted all of 1 year.
Yeah, it didn't last long. Story was a much better sports talking head than he was as an announcer. But, yep, remember that well.
Pete, did you know Bob Wilson?
Oh, yeah. Great announcer.
I happened to meet him. I met him once at a banquet, a sports banquet.
What used to be great, I don't know if you recall this, but he used to take calls on WBZ in the first intermission every game. And with that great BZ signal going across North America, he'd get calls from all over. And like he said, he never knew what was going to come up next, but he enjoyed each and every one of them.
For those who don't know, Bob Wilson was the voice of the Bruins from the 60s till about, oh, my goodness. I want to say the late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah,
correct.
And he was one of the best.
Tremendous man.
What do you think of hockey fights, Pete? Do you think that these players do it for show mostly, or do they really get so angry that they feel they have to deck one another?
If they did it for show, they're not doing a very good show. But I think it is honest anger that gets them to go. There was a little slashing incident late in the game. There was a slashing incident late in the Bruins-Sabres game as well.
Yeah, McAvoy might get a 6-game suspension, worst-case scenario.
Yeah, to start out next year. I would think that they would also make that only apply to regular season games.
Right.
By the way, this year we are going to add 2 games to our schedule, go back to an 84-game slate, and take 2 games off the preseason, reducing that to 4 games.
So, any particular reason why they want to do that?
More money.
Oh, of course.
Yep. Yep. More money. That's what it always boils down to.
More money, less preparation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're doing that in football, and I'm not sure if that's a good idea. you know, adding more games to their schedule, getting back on preseason.
The NFL Players Association is a lot more adamant and militant against that than the NHLPA. Pete, are those two additional games going to be played in your own conference, I assume?
That's going to make so that we can play four games against everybody in our division.
Good. Okay.
That's what's going to happen.
I like that. Okay.
Yeah.
And it takes effect. It's going to take effect next season?
Yes. And we're going to start the season, I keep hearing these rumors, September 29th.
Wow, that's early.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, it's around the 8th of October.
Yeah, and they'd like to spread things out a little bit more and maybe actually have some better games.
Well, I noticed one thing that happened this last season, especially because of the Olympic break. You had games crammed together, and that does a job on players. It really does.
It does. We played in Stockholm in the second week of November. And so we played a game in New York against the Rangers on a Monday night, flew overnight to Stockholm, and played there Friday and Sunday, and then flew back home and didn't play again for 4 days. But still, that takes quite a bit of bouncing back.
Had to be exciting, though, to go all the way clean over to Europe. I've only gone to Canada. That's the only time I've been out of the country.
Yeah. And as you were saying, you had a good experience in London because you found bathroom facilities.
Yeah, true. London, Ontario, Labatt Ballpark.
Right.
So I want to turn the festivities over to our listeners. There are people listening right now who may want to ask you a question. You're listening to Sports Roundtable, and our guest is Pete Weber, radio voice for the Nashville Predators hockey team. Of course, Pete Weber shares the same name with a bowler, Pete Weber. Not the same guy, though. We found that out.
No, we are not the same guy, though I was once supposed to bowl against Pete Weber in a pro-am in Louisville, and thankfully I had another commitment that I had to live up to, so I didn't have to embarrass myself.
I make a wager right now that Pete Weber won.
Yes. I won by not doing it.
Oh, okay. That's right. So, but if you had done it, Pete Weber would have won and Pete Weber would have lost.
That's right.
No matter how you look at it.
I can tell you would have gotten the L.
So let me turn the festivities over to Diane to find out if anybody has their hands raised. There might be some hockey fans out there that would like to know a few things from Mr. Weber here. So Diane, do we have any hands raised?
Not at this time.
All right. Let us know when that changes.
Okay. Yeah.
Pete, I have a question for you.
Yes.
When Nashville came into the NHL, I think that Bob Miller said that Nashville, the Predators' name, did not come from something that's going to eat something else, but was named for a bird. And I did not know there was a bird that was called a predator, and maybe somebody passed Miller a bum story, but is that true?
Good story. And it was as a result when they were excavating land in downtown Nashville, which they can't do anymore. It's all been spoken for. But they came up with a skull from a predator. And that's where it all came from. A saber-toothed tiger they found underneath a First American Bank.
Well, I've been to Nashville a couple of times, and I've been to a place down there, and I hope it's still around, called the Bluebird Cafe.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Tiny place, really.
It's a wonderful place. Absolutely. Yep. Yep.
Famous as it is, it's difficult to get a lot of people in there.
Really? That's kind of sad.
Yes, it is.
Well, hope it stays open.
I think the traditionalists who live here and who, number one, own that facility, will comply with your wishes.
Good. If I ever get down to Nashville again, I'll have to stop in again.
I think you should.
So what do you think the future holds for the Predators right now?
Well, we're in the process of trying to find a new general manager. The new general manager likely will want to name his own coach coming in, and we have no idea yet what the timetable is going to be on that. I think ideally they would like to have a new general manager in place to take over for Barry Trotz before we have the NHL draft coming up after the Stanley Cup playoffs. But, and today the Toronto Maple Leafs named a new general manager and a new senior advisor to the general manager. They brought in John Chayka, who essentially is an analytics guy, and brought in a Hall of Fame player, Matt Sundin, to be his chief advisor.
Oh, okay. Well, the future is bright then. Matt Sundin used to play for Quebec, if I remember correctly.
He started there, then got traded to the Leafs, and as he ended his career, he wanted a new contract. The Leafs didn't want to give him one, so they dealt him off to Vancouver. So here's an all-world player who spent his entirety of his NHL career in Canadian cities. Great guy. Matter of fact, when we were in Stockholm for that two-game series with Pittsburgh, the NHL alumni had a special dinner to honor Mats, and he was given the Boreas Selming Award, named after the great former defenseman for the Maple Leafs who passed away a few years ago. And he gave a fantastic speech. He is obviously somebody very much in tune with what's going on around the professional hockey world, both on this side of the pond and on the other in Europe.
I noticed that more and more sports are going international during the regular seasons. Football does it regularly now. They go to London. They go to Germany. I think they go to Mexico. Baseball does it. They go to the Dominican. They go to Puerto Rico. Hockey does it. Are they thinking that maybe they could expand these leagues internationally, or is it just plain old marketing?
Well, it's marketing, but I think that had the Concord worked out more efficiently, we would have had full divisions in other countries to lessen the travel. I mean, when you could used to be able to go from London to New York in 3 hours on the Concord, but it burns so much fuel, and boy, are we needing to be cognizant of fuel consumption right now, that probably would have been something we'd be talking about already. Say the European division of the NHL, the European division of the NFL. Because I think the way things have gone for football in Germany, it's been absolutely tremendous.
Yeah, well, I think you could still
see baseball in Mexico. I don't see why not, except the ballparks are a little small as of now. If they did some construction down there, because it's still on this continent, I mean, if you can have a team in Canada, and they used to have the Expos played in the cutest little ballpark, Parc Jarry, yes. I used to put a check mark next to every game the Mets would play there so I could listen, because the acoustics were marvelous, because the place was so small. I didn't realize then just why the sound traveled so well. Now I know, because it was a smaller ballpark.
And of course,
just so you know what happened in that first series in Montreal, the Cardinals were there. I grew up a Cardinals fan. So the first Major League Grand Slam hit in Canada was hit by the redoubtable slugger Dal Maxville.
No.
I remember.
Third baseman for the Cardinals back in the 60s.
Shortstop.
He played short, and Julian Javier played second.
Right.
Yep. And Mike Shannon played third.
After Roger Maris came over. Yep.
Well, Pete, you may have a chance to do baseball again. Isn't Nashville kind of moving up as a possible Major League Baseball city?
Commissioner Manfred has said as much, but the problem here is they have to get a ballpark. And I don't know who is going to be the local owner. We're talking large sums of money there. Probably $2 billion for a ballpark and $2 billion to buy a franchise.
Yeah, well, that's just a little detail, right?
Yeah, a small detail, right.
Mitch, are you talking expansion or just a move?
Expansion.
Yeah, expansion. Yeah. Okay. Aren't there any billionaires, multi-billionaires hanging around Nashville? I know a lot of Californians have moved to Tennessee.
Have they ever? I keep getting phone calls wanting to know if I'll sell my house. And that's mostly from the Californians moving here.
If there's any money there, it's down around 16th Avenue, Music Row. And they're not going to part with any of their cabbage to start a Major League Baseball team. All they want is people at the Grand Ole Opry. Like my family, every member of my family except the one who likes country music got to go to the Grand Ole Opry.
That's just not right, Don.
Isn't it? That's what I said.
And by the way, I just remembered baseball's gone to London, too. So
yep. Yanks and Red Sox at the London Stadium. Yes, memorable.
Right. San Diego was just in Mexico City a few weekends ago, right?
That was exciting. That there's a highlight from that on my next upcoming podcast that I do.
Well, I think in Mexico City, the ball travels. The ball really travels in Mexico City.
Boy, does it. It's at high altitude.
Yep.
Just like Denver.
I thought, by the way, Pete, that the Titans, when Tennessee moved from Houston, that they missed a real bet. If you're in at all, if you know anything about country music, I thought that Tennessee should have named themselves. They should have been the Tennessee Studs, which is a great song by Doc Watson, the late Doc Watson, who was a guitar and banjo player. I think it would have been great to play Sunday games with the Tennessee Studs.
Oh, yeah. Never would have made it through that Arkansas mud if I hadn't been riding that Tennessee stud.
That's right.
Chris Berman suggested the Tuxedos.
That's not bad either.
I like that, the Tennessee Tuxedos.
Leave it to Chris Berman.
That's right. Or as George Brett once said to him, he decided to give Chris a nickname, and he called him Chris Ethel Merman Berman.
He's a character, Chris Berman, yeah. Especially when he announces baseball games. He cracks jokes, he cracks puns all the time.
I can only imagine what he would have done with our platoon shortstop, Hyeong Kim. Called him Kim Kong.
Yeah. Yeah. That would have been good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when he hit a home run early in the season.
So do you think hockey will expand?
Oh, yeah. I think that there's going to be another team coming in for certain in Atlanta. They're going to get a third chance, but it's not going to be downtown. It's going to be out where the Braves ballpark is, Truist Park, in the suburbs, where they already have a pretty good setup there. That's where the Predators' secondary farm club is, the Gwinnett Gladiators. They will go in there, and they have a building that they can expand to 17,000. They'll be fine. The other question is, do they go into Houston, or is somebody ready to build a new facility in Arizona, which is the reason the Coyotes failed and are now playing in Salt Lake City?
And why would you give a team to a city? In baseball, the example is Montreal. In hockey, the example is Atlanta. That seems like you're giving Michael Vick a litter of puppies to play with.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. I really don't want to do that.
These teams clearly are not, these cities are not good stewards of the teams they've had, or else they would still have them.
Yeah, now the one thing with Flames, when they moved to Calgary, that was simply the oil boom had gone so well. It was 1980 when they moved, and they simply gave the owners of the Atlantic Flames a deal they could not refuse. The other one, the people who were left after Ted Turner's son-in-law were nothing but a civil war, I hate to use this in terms of Atlanta, but a civil war among themselves, and that's how that team ended up moving to Winnipeg. I think Atlanta could be a very good market. One of the people who is fronting all of that is now on the TNT intermission broadcast of that, and we'll see he is trying to front all of that.
You mentioned Houston as a possible mm-hmm. landing spot. The conversations have been had.
Yes.
But I'm not sure ownership, where the ownership might come from.
I think it's going to be the owner of the Rockets. He's the one that seems to want it.
Fertitta?
Yeah.
Well, I guess he could afford it. I mean, he's bringing the WNBA back.
Right.
But I don't know. They talked about retrofitting the Toyota Stadium.
Right.
Possibly. Or I guess they'd have to build a new stadium if they wanted to, depending. But he's got a lot of irons in the fire.
Yes, he does. Almost so, as many as the Dodgers owners do by the Lakers.
So that's an interesting thought. I don't know if he'd want to buy a team and move them here, or if the NHL decide to expand, he would probably be one of the first people to.
It would be expansion.
Okay.
It's funny. The hockey season's going to expand to 84 games to give even distribution to a number of games in the conference, and then hockey's going to go ahead and expand anyway.
Sure. And then maybe they'll play 2-period games. You don't know.
Any other possibilities besides Atlanta?
Well, as I mentioned, Houston.
And Houston.
And we're wondering about what's going to happen in the Valley of the Sun to make – matter of fact, the NHL has – reserve the name Coyotes to be given to whoever comes in there and establish. They know they need a facility first and foremost. They can't keep playing where people have to drive 90 minutes one way to make it to the building on a weeknight. And so that means they've got to do something around Scottsdale to make it work.
Why were they driving 90 minutes one way?
Because it was a long way out to Glendale.
I remember when the Bruins played the Coyotes one night. It was back in December. I forgot what year it was. I think it was 23 or 24. And they were at a college arena. I mean, it was so rowdy in there. It was unbelievable. You could hardly hear the broadcasters.
5,000 capacity.
But it was rowdy.
Yeah.
Terrible.
It's nice that it was rowdy because it was the arena. The arena's name is the Mullet Arena.
You know, I have a question. I'm surprised, given that, you know, it's middle of the country, and I think Milwaukee has had a hockey, minor league hockey team there forever.
They are our part team, yeah.
Yeah, there's never been any talk about expansion to Milwaukee. I'm a little surprised.
There was talk about it, but the Blackhawks, whose ownership ran the Board of Governors for a long period of time, wanted an exorbitant fee for territorial indemnification. And that's what made that not happen. The team was owned for a long time by actually the guy who was voice of the Blackhawks when I was growing up, Lloyd Pettit. And I enjoyed our early training camp periods because he would be here with his Admirals people and he would tell me great stories about the Bobby Hull, Stan Mikita, Glenn Hall days with the Blackhawks.
Yeah, that to me would seem to be more of a natural place to locate an NHL team than, say, Florida. But
Florida's done all right. And by the way, let's congratulate Vinny Viola, who not only has won the last two Stanley Cups, he obviously will not repeat this year, but also he is part owner of the winner of the Kentucky Derby this weekend.
How do you like that?
The owner for the Panthers. Oh, wow.
Yep.
That's cool.
Eddie Viola. Yep.
You mentioned Bobby Hull. He had a brother, didn't he? Dennis Hull?
Yes, he did. And Dennis Hull.
He played for the Blackhawks also.
Yep. Dennis Hull scored over 400 goals. Blackhawks and Detroit. Bobby scored over 600 in just the NHL. He also had a considerable career in the WHA. But, Dennis Hull wrote a book that said, I was the third best Hull. Our sister was the second best player.
I feel like that.
sort of like Tony Granato's sister, who was good in one of the Olympics, if I recall correctly.
Yes, Cammy was on that first Olympic team.
That's what her name. Yeah, yeah.
And then my buddy Terry Crisp assisted on her goal of the Heroes of Hockey game at the All-Star game in Tampa Bay.
I think she was on the broadcast crew this year for NBC.
She did some, yeah, but her number one job is working in player development for the Seattle Kraken.
Oh. Pete, were you in Los Angeles? My favorite Kings front line of all time was Marcel Dion, Dave Taylor, and Charlie Simmer. Were you there?
I picked up Charlie Simmer at the airport in Detroit when he joined the team before a Saturday afternoon game at the Olympia, where Marcel scored 4 goals. And that I had to go downstairs to do the post-game interview. And when I told the man who was in charge of security at the Olympia, I was going to have Marcel Dion down there in wide in the open. He was hated because he forced a trade out of there to Los Angeles. And you could hear and see, yeah, if I get the old video up, the beer bottles breaking all around us on the ice.
Oh, that had to be frightening.
That was my favorite front line.
Yep.
And the other one from back even before then, and I don't remember the third member, we had Cowboy Bill Flett, Eddie Joyal, and I forget who the third member of that line was.
I think you had Lowell McDonald.
Okay.
And
all right.
Kings had my favorite name for a goaltender. You know, I don't care really whether it was a good goalie or not. Rogatien Vachon. What a wonderful name that is.
Wait for the Canadians. He was a Canadian and a Bruin, too.
Yes.
Rogie was great. He really was very good.
That was a big trade when the Canadians sent him to the Kings. Without any
Rogie. They called him Rogie.
That's right, Rogie.
And we had a big dinner to honor Dave Taylor when they brought me back out for that. And Rogie was at our table. And my wife said, I understand you were the inspiration for the character that played the goaltender in the outstanding movie Slapshot. And all he could do was grin and take a big draw at his cigar after he heard that comment.
Well, you know, what was interesting about Dave Taylor, and he overcame it.
Yes.
But he had a terrible stutter. I remember when he would be interviewed on pre- or post-game shows, he had a lot of difficulty. And as he got older and ended up as the Kings' general manager for a few years, although he wasn't real successful. But he really overcame that stutter.
He did it at speech therapy at UCLA. And we found out about that stutter when I interviewed him ringside in Montreal at the Forum after a game where he was a big part of a 3-3 tie. Yeah, we had ties back in those days.
Yes.
And, not just for Father's Day. And having a difficulty, and thank God Steve Jensen's came skating by and inserted himself into the interview as well.
Yeah. Now he did overcome it, and sorry his managerial career or as a GM wasn't as good as his on ice career, but that was a great line, Simmer, Dion, and Taylor.
And Charlie, I mean, who had the best of it all? Charlie Simmer married the Playmate of the Year.
Not bad.
Yes. Well, except that Norm Nixon, when he was with the Lakers, married a fairly famous dancer actress.
The choreographer from Bang.
Debbie Allen.
Felicia Rashad's sister.
Yes.
She was in Fame. I remember her. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You want fame? That work starts right here.
Yes. Not to be confused with Deborah Allen, the singer of Baby I Lied.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Yep.
Yeah, so, anyway, Pete, you know, I think, to be honest, I think Gary Bettman is running a very, very excellent league. I think hockey is run better than all the other three sports. If I was to rank the four professional sports on how they're run, I'd go hockey number one, football number two, or maybe basketball and football close second and third, and baseball at the bottom.
No question in my mind, baseball's at the bottom.
Baseball needs a complete overhaul, and that's why I got a feeling they're going to go on strike next year.
I think that is almost assured, yes.
I totally agree.
But definitely hockey's being run the best right now. It really, really is. You don't hear too many scandals. You don't hear much greed. You don't hear any internal battles going on with unions, commissioners, and everybody else, ownership and all that. Good old days. You don't hear too much. with
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So any final thoughts, Pete, before we wrap it up?
Enjoy these playoffs, and you'll have the chance to enjoy them well into June, and they will keep you up late at night. This part, there's not any question. Now, for some of you who are on the West Coast, you have it easy. I did when I lived out there, too, because I could watch all the games and still get up in the morning for a 7 o'clock breakfast.
Absolutely. That's one of the few advantages to living out on this coast.
And when I lived
in California,
that was when CBS News finally decided to do an update for Walter Cronkite, because some of that stuff was 3 hours old.
Yes.
Well, I wish the remaining teams the best of luck. I am with you, Pete. I think the Avalanche is going to win the whole thing. I have no clue who's going to come out of the East. It could very easily be the Canadians, the way they're playing.
But I
say the Avalanche is going to win the whole thing, and that would be something, and they deserve it. They've been on fire for the entire season. That's for sure. So, Absolutely. Anyway, Pete, thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate it. We'll have you back again, hopefully, in the future. And, again, best of luck to the Predators next year. Maybe they'll have a better season as well.
Appreciate that. It was those Los Angeles Kings that egged us out of the playoffs.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, small consolation for us.
Anyway, thanks, everyone. Thanks, Diane, Brad, our listeners, Don, Mike, and Mitch, of course, especially you, Pete. And go safe with God's abundant blessings. Talk to you next week.
Once again, Audio Journal listeners, I would like to take time to wish all the mothers a very happy Mother's Day from us to you and to all. Happy Mother's Day from all of us at Audio Journal, part of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Journal is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. We are a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
This is not a public service announcement. This is a one-minute mystery.
Carrie Queen, a professional writer, was sitting in his cabin writing a letter. There was a violent electrical storm outside, and suddenly Carrie died. How did he die?
And here's the solution to our mystery.
He died in a plane crash. Carrie Queen is a professional skywriter. While writing a letter, his plane was hit by lightning.
And now back to our regular programming.
When my dad started to lose his vision, we were worried. Sure, his doctor gave me and my mom some handouts, and I did my fair share of research. But we had no idea how much of a challenge vision loss would be, or how it would impact his quality of life. That's why I was so glad we discovered Mass Commission for the Blind. They work with my dad, and they will work with you and your loved one as well to develop future plans and new skills and assistive technology. They even helped Dad get access to talking books and newspapers. He was so excited.
If your loved one is blind or visually impaired, find out if they are eligible to register for services. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450.
1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.